Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. Twice a month, this podcast looks at one major issue on the continent, one country or one idea at a time. I am Melissa Shimam, and this week we have with us a very special guest, the artist, researcher and art curator Gavin Yantjes from South Africa. His exhibition, Gavin Yantjes, To Be Free, a Retrospective, is visible at the Whitechapel Gallery in London until early September. It opened first at the Sharjah Foundation from November 2023 to March 2024 in the Arab Emirates, a show organized in collaboration with the Africa Institute. The show coincides with the 30th anniversary of the end of apartheid in South Africa. Gavin there is one of the greatest contemporary voices from South Africa in the art world, both for his practice and his work on art history. His formative years in Cape Town coincided with the early years of apartheid. He was born in 1948. He started painting in the 70s, addressing and decrying the consequences of racial discrimination. Then he had to leave South Africa in the 80s. Since then, Yantjes' journeys has embodied a quest for artistic emancipation with a freedom not bound by the Eurocentric gaze or expectation of Black creativity. His life was also marked by itinerant exile away from South Africa, in Germany, Norway, then England. Structured into chapters from the 70s to our day, the exhibition explores his engagement with anti-apartheid activism from the 70s and his transformative role at major art institutions, including portraits of global Black struggle for freedom and his recent transition to abstract painting. In this episode, you'll hear it from the artist himself, as well as Or Al-Kassini, the director of the Sharjah Arts Foundation and president of its African Institute. Firstly, I asked the artist how his unique retrospective came about.
The exhibition was the original idea of the late Okwe Enwiso, and then he passed some years ago, and it was taken up by Salah Hassan, who was the head of the Africa Institute in Sharjah. And together with the Sharjah Art Foundation, they decided to create a retrospective of my work, which we opened last year, the end of last year. And that exhibition has come to London in a smaller form because the exhibition space is slightly smaller in the Whitechapel. But essentially, it's a presentation of my work from round about 1974 up to 2023.
And what is interesting is that there is this very open title, then two parts of your work, recent works that you've produced specifically from last year, and of course, works that you produce mostly in exile that represents your relationship to your homeland, if we can call it that way. Was this your decision, and did you intend these two parts to kind of speak to each other and to tell a different story about your own journey through the arts?
Yeah, it has to do with my journey. I have a particular sort of artistic journey. I've done almost everything in the arts, from being an artist to writing about art history, publishing books about South African art history, to curating major exhibitions in the UK, an artistic director of Norway's biggest contemporary art museum, and then working for the Norwegian National Gallery. And then in 2015, I returned to my studio and picked up a career that I had sort of set aside when I moved to Norway to take up this very prestigious position. And when I decided to come back to the studio, to my own practice, I challenged myself to create something that I had never previously created, and that was to move the work from a very political discourse to a discourse about visuality and expectation and freedom of choice. And so the work that I do now is non-figurative, and it's entirely up to the viewer to make up their mind about this art and its quality, whereas my earlier work was really about passing on information about the historical discrepancies, the racism of the apartheid state, the myopia, cultural myopia of European cultural institutions towards art production in what today we call the Global South. So I have a very, very complex career, And in 2015, after being a curator for almost 20 years, I decided to return to my studio and basically make paintings again, which is what I was doing when I closed my studio in 1998.
I then asked the artist how he went from living in a segregated Cape Town in a colored family to studying art at a time where it was highly unlikely for people like him.
I went to an art center when I was 3 years old. My kindergarten, which was literally on the same block as where my parents had their home. The kindergarten took me to a place called the Children's Art Center. And I went there from the age of three. And I stayed with the Children's Art Center throughout my basic education. And when I finally left high school, the art center helped me to make an application to go on to study art at the University of Cape Town at the Michaelis School of Fine Art. And I was the only black student in the cohort year that I was in. Stayed there, studied there for 4 years, then won a scholarship to Germany, where I had my first studio, basically, and I started out making screen prints. But the fact that I had this access to art practice at a very early stage comes through the community in which I grew up, which was in a place called District 6, which the apartheid government literally just eradicated. It told everybody, all the black people who lived in District 6, to move out. It bulldozed the buildings behind them as they left. And that bulldozed open field in the heart of the city of Cape Town is still there today. If you travel to Cape Town, you'll notice there's just this vast open unused space, literally at the foot of Table Mountain, in which once over 600,000 people lived, and they were all just moved out to an area there that was called the Cape Flats, which is about 30, 40 miles from the center of the city. And that's where most of my relatives and friends lived. I come from a very large family. My mother had 13 brothers and sisters. My family, if I count them today, is over 1,200 people. So that's my life experience with Cape Town. It's a place I go often, I visit often, I consider it my home. And for years, my artistic engagement was what was happening to South Africa. So I became an activist, and that led me to produce a major work, which is called the South African Colouring Book, which was a screen print edition. And that was what I started out as when I studied in Hamburg. I made screen prints, and then from there, I moved on to painting, taught myself painting because I'd never been trained as a painter. And then had a London gallerist in the early to mid 80s. My gallerist passed away, and I never really took on another gallery. I just simply continued working and creating my own exhibitions.
Then we discuss what changed for him and other anti-segregation artists after the end of apartheid.
When the apartheid government finally fell, and all the hard work we had put in to make it fall came to fruition, and South Africa had its first democratic elections. The big question was, and it was a question that we had discussed in a large artistic conference in Gaborone, in the capital of Botswana in 1982. And the question was, what are artists going to do when apartheid is dead, when apartheid no longer exists legally? Because I personally feel that we cannot just be called apartheid artists. That's an absurdity. If you were to expect every French artist after the fall of Nazism and the occupation of France, and all the artists were activists and fought against fascism, that they would continue simply to do that for the rest of their lives. But yet it is expected that African artists coming from South Africa simply continue to make anti-apartheid art. And that's not what we are in the world for. If one of the key issues in the art world is change, then what are we doing if not changing? Changing the world through the images we create, changing attitudes through the ideas we put into the discourse around art. And what I noticed in my own practice, that this expectation was that because I was once an activist, I'm sort of expected to do this, to making an art that was actively anti-everything, not positive for anything. It was never about myself. It was always about what people were doing to me and my colleagues. And I thought that if I started making work which was focused on artistic practice rather than on content, the discourse can shift from what expectations what the expectations were putting into the discourse. So if you stand in front of my work today, you have to ask yourself, what am I thinking? I'm not being told what to think. How do I feel? I'm not being told about how I should feel. I have to make up my own mind. So I'm giving that what artists believe is their prerogative, that we have the prerogative on self-expression. I think self-expression is for every human being. Every human being should find their own way of dealing with the what is in their visual scene, in their visual scope, and make decisions about that. You can stand in front of a work and say, no, I don't like it, and move on and find another work that you do like. You may also find yourself standing in front of a work that gives you no stepping stones, gives you no passageway into it. And therefore, you have to make up your mind about why you are still standing there looking at this object. And I think in that moment, you are being yourself. You are actually making decisions as an independent human being, which is what people in the West have done all the time with their artists. It's just that when you come to the position of the artist from the so-called global South, you're confronted with an expectation. And I think what I'm trying to do is to shift away from that expectation and force people in the art world to discourse, to create a discourse around what is visually present rather than what they expect to be present.
And that's probably the roots of the title.
Yeah, the reason of the title is to be free. It is to free yourself. When you ask that question, to be free, the question is free from what? And of course, this issue of free from what is about free from expectation, free from the dictates of what the art world is telling you you should be, rather than be yourself. And the art world tells people from the global South, this is what we expect you to be.
In a way, it makes me think of the work of Frank Bowling, who's
now... Yes, exactly.
One of the first British Black artists, but has always refused to pin down his work in relation to social issues and work with abstraction instead.
Absolutely.
In a way, it also makes me think of the story of Nina Simone, you know.
Yeah, that's where the title comes from. If you take the words of that, it's actually not by Nina Simone, it's, I forget the poet's name, but she made it popular by singing it, and it became an anthem in the civil rights movement. The song, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. That's the one I'm talking about. If you listen to the words of that song, you'll realize that's what I'm doing. That song has become the anthem of my practice of the last 6 years.
So we can expect you to move forward with painting. You're not done with this. Are you already working on something?
I'm already, as you can see behind me in the studio, I've got tons of work I've produced. I mean, even before the Sharjah exhibition happened, I've been working in this vein. I have a large body of work, a large chunk of it we've not even been able to present in the Sharjah exhibition because they decided to make a retrospective. And what I have now in my studio is bodies of work on canvas, on paper, in drawing books, et cetera, that I've been doing since 2015. So it's almost 10 years of work. And this is my current response. So in a way, I've remained an activist. It's just my activity has a new sense of direction.
Thank you so very much, Gavin. We could talk about this for hours. But
I know.
All the very best. And I hope to catch up with you on the next show, maybe somewhere in Europe, actually.
Okay. Thank you very much.
This was Gavin Jantjies, one of the most prominent South African artists of our time, at the centre of a major retrospective in London at the Whitechapel Gallery. About the exhibition, I also spoke with Hoor Al-Kassimi, the director of the Sharjah Art Foundation and president of its African Institute. We also talked about Sharjah's interest in contemporary African art in general. She explained how the project came about and what the foundation intends to do for African and, in general, global South artists.
Gavin's work is very influential in the UK. He was part of a very important movement with the initiation of Innova and introducing artists from the global South really into the UK. So not only as an artist, but as a practitioner and curator, his work is very important, but we haven't really seen a retrospective or survey show for him. And through discussions with my colleague, Dr. Salah Hassan, who is the curator of the show, we thought it would be really important to give Gavin this platform. We decided to do is not only look at Gavin's historic work and looking at his practice from the early days, from screen printing onto painting, but also invited Gavin to do a residency in Sharjah, where he created some new paintings.
Can you say a few words on how different or similar this exhibition is compared to the rest of your work, what you're trying to do with African contemporary arts specifically, and the Africa Institute and other projects you have?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Africa Institute started as a very early project. It started as the Africa Hall in 1976 with a conference on African Arab relations. And 40 years later, looking back at that history, I decided to set up the Africa Institute as an institute for African and African diaspora studies. And we started with a conference on global Africa. But not only that, we're working on different institutes, Oceania, the Americas, and they're all coming under the umbrella of the Global Studies University, which should start receiving students next year. The importance is to be able to write about all of these histories through the history of art, social sciences, humanities, music, anthropology, archaeology, but trying to get more content and more writing and more research from the Global South. And we also set up a language center that will include more and more languages. At the moment, we're teaching Amharic, Hausa, Kiswahili, and Arabic.
To prepare the exhibition, did you do any research in South Africa? Was it useful to go back there? And was there a legacy of his work? Is there a connection between you in South Africa in order to, have a great look at his career?
We are looking to do a next season at the Africa Institute with South Africa. So we do a country-focused season. We started with Ethiopia and Ghana and the Indian Ocean archipelago. But in terms of Gavin's work, Salah is very familiar with Gavin's work, and it was a collaboration really with Salah and the artist Gavin. Yeah.
So thank you very much for being with us at RFI.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time, Melissa.
This was Oor Al-Kassimi, the director of the Charter Arts Foundation and president of the African Institute. She was talking about Gavin Yenta's retrospective, which is on show in London until the beginning of September. And if you go to London and are interested in South African artists, don't miss the two interesting exhibitions of Ernest Cole's photography from South Africa and from New York City. They are at the Photographer's Gallery and at Autograph in Shoreditch. This was a new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. It was recorded and mixed by our sound engineer, Erwan Holm. Thanks, Erwan. And a special thanks to Jesse Cohen, too, who made this interview possible. Thanks to you, too, for listening. We'll be back soon to comment on more African affairs. In the meantime, for more African and French news, you can go to our website, rfi.fr/en.